You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome along. You're listening to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Dave Kellner and Dave Tindall with you this week ahead of the Lioness Open and the FedEx St. Jude Classic on the PGA Tour. Good to have you with us, folks. 1 week to go until the US Open 2016 as well. We'll be looking forward to that on next week's podcast. First of all, a warm welcome to the man sitting beside me here in the studio, Dave Tindall. Good afternoon, sir.
Hello, Dave. Looking forward to the Austrian event this week. No, I am a bit, sort of.
It is one of those weeks where I think there's no doubt a lot of punters and compilers will be getting set for the season's second major championship. Yes. At Oakmont, because historically Oakmont has been a terribly difficult golf course for the players to cope with, and judging by what we've seen on Twitter and the quotes on the internet in the lead up to the championship, it suggests it's going to be pretty damn tough for those players next week.
Indeedy. Some of the top end of the Austrian market, you do wonder how serious they are about winning the US Open if this is their warm-up. You can forgive Bernd Wiesberger because it's its home event, but some of the other better names?
Yeah, and I agree. It's a weak event. We'll get stuck into those two events very shortly, the Lioness and the St. Jude Classic. But first of all, quick reflection on last week and Matthew Fitzpatrick's win at Brohofslot in the Nordea Masters was galling, to say the least, because I've picked him two of the last three times he's played golf, and I think I got caught up with my preconception going into the event was that it was for bombers,
right.
And Matthew Fitzpatrick is patently not a bomber, but he showed last week that his win at Woburn was on a track that you'd expect him to succeed on, whereas Brohofslot maybe, in my mind, wasn't one of those courses you'd think, ah, this is a Matthew Fitzpatrick type of course, this one, and left him out and was...
Been chuntering ever since.
I have been chuntering ever since, because 40-1 in that field...
It does look
in
big.
Hindsight, looks
very
absolutely
big.
Huge, doesn't it?
I guess you could say that if he was good enough to finish tied 7th at Augusta, which was surely, you know, on the long side for him, on the very long side for him, then he could win there and he could win anywhere. And possibly that as well. That was his only top 10, wasn't it, of the season? So that might have put you off a bit more.
Yeah.
That he had dipped again.
Yeah.
It's just one of these you've just got to remember, sort of, he is class, isn't he? And he, as a young players maybe do have more dips, barring, you know, the absolute elite like Spieth, McIlroy and Day. But a lot of the other ones, they have great moments but then can dip again. And then he's maybe in that phase of his career.
Mm. Yeah, it was immensely frustrating.
Yeah.
Anyway, we move on. And Willie McGirt was the winner of the Memorial Tournament, which came as a bit of a bolt from the blue. Been in decent form, McGirt, but...
The McGirt-Curran playoff wasn't one I saw coming.
I didn't have the forecast.
No.
I didn't have the forecast last week. With those top players in the field, the big three, obviously, the narrative in the lead-up to the championship was about which one of those three was going to come out on top at the end of the week. And even going into that final round, you had Dustin Johnson and Matt Kuchar towards the top of the leaderboard, and both those players reached minus 16 or 16 under par on the Sunday, but 15 under made the playoff in the end.
Yeah, strange, wasn't it? I mean, there was a point I was doing it in running where McIlroy was in the clubhouse at minus 13 and his odds went down to 10-1 because, you know, the compilers were thinking, my word, that could stand up. You know, it came down from 33s, kept coming down and down, and everyone was going backwards. And there seemed a point where you might even, you know, get to extra holes. I think JB Holmes had also posted 13 under.
Yeah.
But so the top two, the playoff contenders, did hold it together down the stretch. And, yeah, a good win for McGirt. But like I say, it's strange, isn't it, when he's been in position before to win events and has folded a bit, and then he goes and wins a big one.
Weird.
confusing.
It's golf, isn't it? That's
upsetting,
golf.
Distressing.
If you're wondering where Mike Grenham is, by the way, he's like one of the players that's opted not to play this week, or the compilers that are, yeah, that are focusing on next week. He's keeping a little back in reserve.
Is he playing? Is he sort of talking about things in Pennsylvania?
He is, yeah. And he's promising me the winner next week. He's promised me the winner next week as well. Strictly might not be true, but I've got a feeling he's going to come good next week, Mike.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Let's get stuck into this week then. Mr. Tindall, we'll start with the Lioness Open on the European Tour. And Bernd Wiesberger, the home hero, is the 7-1 joint favourite with Joost Luiten. Chris Wood is 8-1. Gregory Bourdie is 16-1. James Morrison, 25-1. Richie Ramsey in the betting at 25-1. 33-1 for Callum Shinquin. Lee Slattery and Lucas Gerrigard, and it's 40-1 and bigger the remainder. And it's the seventh consecutive year that the Diamond Country Club in Atzenbrugg in Austria has hosted this championship. And the top three in the betting, Dave, all have winning form around the course. Bernd Wiesberger, winner here in 2012, Joost Luiten in 2013, and Chris Wood, who won at Wentworth a couple of weeks ago, is the defending champion. And it opens up something of a quandary for punters here, because in all likelihood we wouldn't ever see these three going off at a single figure price for any other event on the European Tour, but all three hold pretty solid credentials.
Yeah, I mean, Loughton's never been out of the top three, has he, in this tournament? I guess maybe when they, well, they were kind of exposed, but some, maybe the key this week is finding someone who will become a class act, because you kind of look back on who's won this event, some good names in there,
yeah,
but maybe at the time they weren't pulling up any trees and it came up. So maybe that's the key this week. I can't say I've got a bet in it, to be honest, but I just wonder some of the better names further down who might be youngsters coming through, although even guys like Jordan Smith, who I think some people have latched onto, he's known about, isn't he? 40-1.
Yeah.
It's not like he's crept in at 125, gone unnoticed. He's very much on the radar.
It's funny you mention him, because I've noted him down as one of my honourable mentions here, yes. Jordan Smith, because he would have maybe interested me at a bigger price. A lot of people will know about his exploits on the Challenge Tour, yep, but some won't. And he is top of the order of merit on the Challenge Tour at the moment. And this is as close as he's going to get to a Challenge Tour event on the main,
yeah,
tour, you would think, because he is a winner already this season. Interestingly enough as well, he was on the Walker Cup side back in 2013. That side included Matt Fitzpatrick,
yeah,
who obviously won last week and has gone on to greater things subsequently. I'm not suggesting that could affect his performance this week, but Jordan Smith will have pleasant memories of this golf course because he has played it before as well, hasn't he, Jordan Smith?
Yeah, that was his first event, wasn't it? Yeah, he got an invite. So sometimes it unfolds, isn't it, that you get little stories like that, that it was the scene of his first event and happy memories for it. And he's playing well as well. But yeah, 40-1 just seems a bit, the handicap has got him.
I think as well, you reference those players that you think could come through and really have an impact on the tour in the future. Callum Shinquin's another,
yeah,
but he has really been ducked at 33-1. He's probably half the price I'd have taken in this field, but definitely had him in mind for this event. 59th on debut last year, and one that's coming into the event with solid European Tour form as well.
Yeah, I'll be no surprise if he does well this week, but again, I can't be backing him at that price.
No pick for you then?
No, I can't quite settle on anyone at the odds. If someone said to me you could have a free bet on this tournament, I think I'd just put it on Wiesberger, because he made a real mess of it last year, missed the cut. But before then, he had won and he had finished runner-up as well. So he's not one of these who falls to pieces in front of his home crowd with the weight of Austria on his shoulders. He's one who thrives under it, so I think he might go in.
The only thing I would say about his performance is, because I've tipped him this season already, and he's flattered to deceive slightly, yeah, which is a little bit of a concern going into this championship. Of the top three in the betting, I've got a pick here, I'll come to that in a second. Of the top three in the betting, I think I'd go Luiten just, yeah, over Wiesberger. I'm not sure about Chris Wood. how heavily he will have been celebrating following his Wentworth win, and if there might be a little bit of letdown, even though he has had the break. I think of the top three in the betting, listeners are noting this one down just for next week, but Chris Wood is the one that I'd least like on my side.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah,
would you agree?
I'd go Wiesberger, Loughton, Wood as my
okay. I'd go Loughton, Wiesberger, and Wood as my tricast there. But the pick that I'm going with is Richie Ramsey at 25 to 1.
Yeah.
I think that price is the value at the top end of the market. The course should fit him perfectly. We've not mentioned much about the course, but it's a par 72 measuring 7,458 yards. Couple of gettable par fives in the first four holes. So if you're starting on the front side, it's imperative you take advantage of this golf course early on. It's a golf course that probably deserves a better turnout because it tests, really, Dave, every facet of a player's game.
Yeah, it's kind of one of these scheduling things, isn't it, really?
And the meagre purse as well, relatively speaking.
Yeah, it's a very low one, unfortunately. Although, it's all relative, isn't it?
It is all relative.
I'd like to win the first prize. But yeah, I can see why Ramsey would go well this week. He's won a kind of similar-ish standard event, didn't he, in Morocco. That's kind of on a par,
and
purse-wise.
When he won in South Africa, his first European Tour victory, again, one of those lesser, weaker events. I think this is where he really thrives and shines, really, Richie Ramsey.
Yeah, I mean, he's a former US amateur champion. He's got a touch of class about him, yeah. So you could certainly argue that he shouldn't be over three times the price as some of those front three in the market.
I definitely agree with that. 25 to 1. He had to settle for a tie for 11th here last year, which was his tournament debut, but no disgrace in that, given he shot an opening round 74, came back well. In fact, over the course of Friday, Saturday and Sunday, he was only one shot worse off than Chris Wood, who went on and won the event. Obviously, you can't say he would have finished closer, but in all likelihood he might have. But he ranked 5th in driving accuracy, 4th in greens in regulation last year. I think this is more of a plotter's course than a bomber's one. And even though I really thought he was going to kick on from that Trophy Hassan win last year, as you mentioned, two of his three wins have come in weaker fields. And he tied for 6-3 starts ago in China, came back from 3 weeks off to finish down the field at the Irish Open after a disappointing round of 78 in the third round there. And he finished tied for 43rd at Wentworth, which is a course that he's never really thrived on. So that's not even as bad a result as the number suggests there. Struck the ball really well at Wentworth as well, which I found encouraging. And this is something... Matt Cooper's done your piece on Roto World Golf, hasn't he, this week?
Yes, I was playing real-life golf.
Playing real-life golf?
Yes.
You're not allowed to do that, Dave Tindall. You're meant to just be a viewer.
First round of the year, would you believe?
How did you play?
Well, for the first time in my life, I'd had golf lessons, so it was a bit of a hit-and-miss affair. I had a few snap hooks going on, which I was quite pleased about because I've never done that before, so something's changed.
Have you always sliced it?
Yeah.
I need to go for lessons because I actually played last night for the first time in about nine months.
Right.
And the putting was good. The getting on the green was pretty poor.
Yeah. I had a birdie.
There you go. That's all you ask for. Yeah. But anyway, Matt Cooper has written your piece this week,
yes.
And he's come up with a really interesting link. He says in that piece, there's an intriguing link with Toulouse Golf Club.
Yeah, I think he nicked that off my preview the year before.
Oh, did he really?
I'll
give you both credit then for this. But it is a good one because that's a Jeremy Pern course that's used on the Challenge Tour.
Yeah.
This golf course in Atzenbrugge, the Diamond Country Club, is a Jeremy Pern design as well. And Wiesberger and Loughton, both winners on that golf course in Toulouse, both winners on this golf course as well. And Ramsey, Richie Ramsey,
yeah, it's a nice
won there
link,
in 2008, which is a really nice link. And that comes from the Roto World piece, which Dave writes most weeks. And in addition to this, that was used, by the way, that Alliance Golf Open in Toulouse was used on it was part of the Challenge Tour from 2003 to 2012. The Scot, Eric Ramsey, has won on a Jeremy Pern design golf course,
right,
which is weird. There was a Jeremy Pern design used on the Challenge Tour in Poland in 2008 and 2009.
And Aaron Ramsey won.
And Eric Ramsey won there in 2009. So I like that. I think that's a good omen for this week. So Richie Ramsey, my selection at 25-1. Any others worthy of mention before we move on?
Just some of the kind of guys who have got a touch of class. Wai Yang played well, didn't he, at Wentworth, and he's 80-1.
I looked at him.
Yeah.
He was a tempter.
You do wonder if he can sort of keep it going for four rounds, but he's had little flashes over this season and last season where he's been up, certainly been up there. Maybe could look at him first round market, maybe if you want to rein it in a little bit, but yeah.
Only major champion in this field? Just having a quick... I didn't spot this pre-tournament. Just having a look down and glancing through the field, he must be.
He must be, yeah. I can't see anyone else there unless Gary Player's in it or something.
Yeah. No, I think he's the only major champion in the field.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Wai Yang was another intriguing one at 80-1.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just the one pick then. Richie Ramsey, 25-1. I'll play him a point each way. Let's move on to the FedEx St. Jude Classic. And in a similar way, this golf course deserves better because it's a good golf course. TPC Southwind has hosted the FedEx St. Jude Classic since 1989. And this is now the 59th edition of the championship. And Dustin Johnson is the 6-1 favourite here with William Hill. Brooks Koepka in the betting at 12-1. Phil Mickelson, 14s. Ryan Palmer, 14-1. Gary Woodland is 20s. Daniel Berger, 25s. Harris English in the betting at 25-1. And it's 33-1 and bigger the rest. And neither distance nor accuracy necessarily a factor from the tee. But the approach shots will need to be smart if players are going to capitalise. Par 70 measuring 7,244 yards. And Fabian Gomez triumphed last year with a 13 under par total. And if you're looking at stats here, I'd take more than a cursory glance at par 4 scoring. And if you're breaking down those strokes gained tee to green, maybe look at strokes gained on the approach and around the green this week, because it is a second shot golf course, this one.
Yeah, I would agree with that that new stat around the greens. I think scrambling, the small greens, aren't they? So you're going to miss your fair share, so you need to get it up and down.
I just saw you out the corner of my eye there, Dave Tindall, just scowl slightly as one of the players that you, I presume one of the players that you quite like, has been chopped in the last couple of moments. And full transparency on this podcast, as always.
Absolutely. It does seem to be, doesn't it, that we sit here and we think we're not being watched and monitored, and somehow there's an eye in the sky that can read our minds or look
William
over
Hill,
our shoulders,
big brother, isn't it?
See our notes and go, right, we'll chop him 10 points. And I've just become the latest victim of that.
You did have two selections. Are you going to reduce stakes and still leave this man in or not?
No, I'll just go with it.
Okay.
I can't. It's annoying, but it'd be worse than to just discard him and he wins, wouldn't it? So
yes.
I'll have to go with the lesser of the two evils.
And you agree with me in terms of, as you mentioned, strokes gained approaching the green and around the green, because you are going to miss these small surfaces from time to time, even if you're the best player in the world here.
Yeah, that's very true. So I've gone for a player who's, as my main pick, who's obviously a recognised top scrambler. Won a US Open before, Gray McDowell.
Yeah.
Was 50s, now 40s.
He is.
But on we go. Yeah, if you look at his recent form, it's kind of good, but it's maybe you don't blown away by it. But tied 27th at Wentworth was actually, he's only beaten that once in about 13 attempts.
Is that right?
So that is for him, that was an excellent display there. And at Sawgrass, tied ninth is always good at Sawgrass, isn't it? But it was actually his first top 25 at Sawgrass. So I think those are two notable performances that are sort of as a recent thermometer check of how well he's playing. And then I think what he needs is to get on a course that he has, or he should play well. And I think this is a course, it's not too long. Europeans have done well there, as McDowell himself has noted, with Westwood and Robert Carlson. He actually thinks it's because... he likens it to some of the Asian tour courses where that's kind of that quite strong Bermuda greens, which he's played well on before. So it's one where he thinks he can go well. He was tied seventh there on debut open with a 66. He's had another top 25 there a couple of years ago. Didn't do very well last year, but he was in a bit of a slump, wasn't he, last summer? So we can know that. But I do think he's got a really good game for it. The other thing that I like is he does play well before majors.
Right, okay.
2014, in three of the his last tournament before three of the majors, he had a win and two top tens.
Is that right? That is intriguing.
Mm. So not every... I know players are trying to sort of peak in time. Sometimes they get it wrong, sometimes they get it right. Others basically just use it as a warm-up and hit the shots for next week rather than on this course. Mm. But he won the French Open and at Celtic Manor. So he's won three times before playing in a major. I don't think any of them were bang the week before, but the same principle. He can focus on the job in hand rather than get distracted by the next one. That's kind of a bit of a bonus, but I just think it's a good Graham McDowell course, and 50s was obviously great, but 40s is acceptable given the fact that he's just a proven winner, isn't he? He does know how to win.
Definitely. 40-1, Graham McDowell, Dave's first. But you've got another one, haven't you, Dave?
Yes.
I've just got the one here, so I'll give mine now. I'm going with a 125-1 shot here. He's not being cut, which is nice. And I think he's a good price. Alex Chaker is my selection at 125-1.
Sort of a poor man's McDowell.
You're kind of a poor man's McDowell. I think the price is nice, though. Yeah. And I really like experience around this golf course. Not necessarily of the golf course.
Yeah.
But you look at the winners in the last 15 years at this track, it gives us numerous examples of players that have been around the block, basically. Mm. And Chaker definitely fits that bill. Yeah. He won his first event on tour in the Puerto Rico Open last year, a course that a few of the more astute golf betting writers have noted as one that correlates well with this one. And he's got a tendency, or he's had a tendency, to play well on golf courses that don't necessarily favour length this season. Yep. Very strong ninth place finish at the Players' Championship just a month ago. Stout defence in Puerto Rico with an 11th place finish. And what I really like is this season he ranks 18th in strokes gained approaching the green, 46th in strokes gained around the green. And I really like his par 4 scoring stats as well. 32nd in par 4 scoring, which is really good. Just got a solid look to him this week, Chaker. Finished 22nd here last year, which was the first time he'd played it since 2011. I think the stars are aligned for a big run at 125-1.
Yeah, it's a nice each-way price, that. He's someone who can get up there. He's won, hasn't he? He did get a win.
Yeah, that Puerto Rico Open last year.
Of course, you just said, yeah. Because there was a spell where he was getting up there and he would always think, well, he's never actually going to get over the line, is he? But he did in Puerto Rico.
Willie McGirt style.
Yeah. But yeah, I kind of associate him with those events where McDowell does well, where, you know, they're not bombers courses. And
that's it. You've got to kind of plot your way around the golf course a little bit.
Definitely.
Second pick?
Yeah, I can't pretend my second pick is a great price, but he's one of those ones I've been following for a while. So maybe there's an element of Matt Fitzpatrick to it, but Colton Ost.
Right, okay.
Not Daniel Berger.
I thought he would have been in there.
He's dead to me. He's old news. Colton Ost. So I liked a couple of weeks ago at Colonial.
Yes.
And he didn't deliver the goods there, but that had come on the back of some really good form where he was tied 14th at the Heritage, tied third at the Players' Championship, which is a fantastic result, and tied fourth at the Byron Nelson. There was quite a lot of pressure on him at Colonial because it was a home state event. And I think once it started to go a bit wrong, it exaggerated the poor performance and he did fall away badly. But he had started well there. And if you look at his stats there, they were really good. Again, he was first in driving accuracy and third for greens in reg. And I think greens in reg, they are small greens. So if you can hit them, you know, you're going to leave yourself a birdie putt more often than not. So his stats look good. I mean, you look at his GIR stats, I think he's been in the top 10 in his last four tournaments, so he really is, you know, irons dialed in, and he's got a bit of course form as well. He's played it four times. He's got a tied 12th and a tied 15th, so it's not outstanding, but I think if you look back at records of previous winners, they've got maybe a decent ish without a load of sort of like top fives in a row. So I think he's done enough on the course, and I did dig out a quote where he said, "This is one of my favourite courses we play all year."
Right.
Now, I know you're a bit sceptical on courses, and maybe they're saying that with the director sitting behind him. But
I am a little bit.
But I can see why he might say that, because it's not too long. He's a short hitter. You know, this course is in the south. He's a Texan. Mm. It can get windy. I think it should be a course that suits him. And I think the tied 12th last year and the tied 15th before that, he wasn't ripping up any trees, was he, really, for the last few years? He's someone who's maybe come on a lot this year, I think. So I think get him on the right course, he could go well. Now, 33-1 is a bit disappointing, but I don't want to miss him, so that's kind of swaying me the other way. If you mean, look at the front end of the market. Dustin Johnson's like a sort of class racehorse that just finds one or two good every time these days. Mickelson's no sort of price for someone who's not won on American soil since February 2013. I mean, that's a long time, isn't it?
Yeah.
14-1.
He does play well the week before major championships, doesn't he? But he might be gearing up for next week at Oakmont as well.
I think he's interesting next week, you know.
I think he's very interesting. Yeah. I was saying this on the golf course last night to one of my friends I was playing with, and I think he's very interesting for the US Open. But you know what I reckon? 33-1. If he shows up well here, he'll go off shorter than that, won't he?
Yeah, so you might want to just get some down at that price. You do look at his... we're just getting slightly sidetracked by the US Open, but I'll say it now. He does play his best US Open golf on the East Coast. We're in Pennsylvania this time. I think maybe 5 of his 6 runners-up have been on the East Coast. Mm. One of them wasn't here, though. I looked back at his form at Oakmont. I think it was something like tied 28th. So you think, oh, this maybe isn't one of his good tracks. But he had a hand injury that week when Cabrera won.
Yeah.
So he wasn't, you know, at full pelt. He was definitely compromised that run. So I think you can sort of take a less dim view of that than you might have. So might have. And I think that's a decent price this next week, whereas this week it looks a bit... because you know for fine well it's all about next week for him, isn't it? This is a bit of a bonus and...
It hasn't stopped him in the past, though, has it? If you are looking to back Phil Mickelson at 14-1.
It hasn't, but I think if you look at his results, a lot of them are kind of... You can almost nail it down to somewhere like 10th. So many times before majors, finished sort of 10th, but not right up there. So I think that's what he'll want. He wants to play well without maybe being under the gun. Mm. I think there's a famous one he won at TPC... is it Sugarloaf? He won the Bell South by 15 shots or something ridiculous, and then he did win the Masters the week after. But I think these days, I think he's very much in warm up mode. So I think the front end of the market, Brooks Koepka's 12-1. That looks short as well for someone who's.
It doesn't look as short as Ryan Palmer at 14s, though, does it?
Well, again, yeah, that's far too short. Gary Woodland likes this course, but he's been collared for his good play last week at 20s. Daniel Berger. 25-1. I mean, he's...
You tipped him in a stronger field at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans at 25s, I think.
Did I? Well, I think probably so. Once bitten, twice shy, then, I think. He's not doing enough at the moment to justify that sort of price.
The one that intrigues me most at the top end of the betting is Harris English at 25-1.
Even that, I would want 33s, I think.
I would as well. Yeah. I put down Harris English and Gary Woodland as both looking solid, but I didn't want to get involved with either at the price, but I can see why people would with Harris English at 25-1 rather than Gary Woodland at 20-1.
Yeah.
First point here is I think Harris English is simply a better golfer than Gary Woodland, and he's won at this course, and he played incredibly well at Colonial and was just beaten by an outstanding performance from Jordan Spieth. Didn't buckle under the gun there, whereas Gary Woodland, even though he still played the shots and still played well last week, he could have won that tournament easily. And he frittered away a few shots.
Yeah, it's just a shame. English, well, it's inevitable his price would be cut. But if it had just been like a week gone, or he'd played averagely since or something, you would have got 33s, 35s, 40s or something. But because it's still so fresh in the memory, has been cut. And obviously the course win doesn't help his price either.
What one other I want to mention before we wrap here, Patrick Rogers is 100-1, which I find intriguing this week. I know he's not kicked on the way many anticipated, but if you're looking for a player who has the possibility of rising to the upper echelons of the game at a big price, 100-1 is huge for him. And we could look back at this and think, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, if you'd have said 12 months ago that he would have been 100-1 in this field, I wouldn't have believed you.
Yeah.
But his numbers aren't great. He's not striking the ball very well with his irons, performing pretty well off the tee. Hasn't been firing on all cylinders this season, but did finish 29th last year in this event. I just think 100-1, you could think, well, that's huge.
Yeah. One interesting one for me as well at 66 is last week's playoff loser, John Curran.
Right.
I kind of can see why people would avoid him like the plague, thinking that was his moment and he'll be all flustered. But clearly he played great, didn't he, last week?
Yes.
Even though he didn't win, it was still a huge week for him, I think. I just remember looking at the betting there at Kyle Stanley. Now, do you remember when he blew at that win at Torrey Pines when I think he took a triple bogey on the last hole?
Yeah, did before winning at Phoenix.
Yeah, and then he won in Phoenix the next week. So, and I've seen it before, players who you think, oh, that's their moment. But, you know, I think if he was then collared like some of them have been, but he's 66-1 still.
Mm. Yeah, I could see that.
And it wasn't his only good performance so far. He's been popping up on leaderboards for the last few weeks before that. So it's sort of a price where I think you're giving the punter a chance there to have a little go.
Very good. Let's wrap it up then. Who's the player you don't want to win this week, Dave Tindall? Have you got one?
I'm not sure I have, to be honest. In Europe, well, I suppose Wiesberger, because I've not tipped him, so therefore he wins.
Yep.
I feel like I could have banked a cheeky 21 points with 3 points win at sevens.
Mine's pretty easy. I think it's got to be Patrick Rogers for me. Only just left him out at 100-1. Selections then. My two picks this week, I'm going with Richie Ramsey, a point each way at 25-1, and Alex Chayka, a point each way at 125-1 in the St. Jude. Dave?
Yeah, so I'll go for a point each way, Colt Most at St. Jude at 33s, and a point each way, Graham McDowell at 40-1 at St. Jude.
Very good. You can follow us on Twitter, please do, at M. Grenham. Mike will be back for the podcast next week, US Open preview coming to you. And myself, at D. Kellner, Dave Tindall, at Dave Tindall Golf. Make sure you get your bets on for the Lioness Open and the FedEx St. Jude Classic. And we'll be back next week. Hopefully you've enjoyed this podcast, folks. Remember, do leave a comment on iTunes. You can download this podcast there just by typing in William Hill, or check us out at audioboom.com. Again, type in William Hill to get all our on-demand audio. Thank you for listening to the podcast, and we'll be back next week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.